With encouragement to make the best of our circumstances, here's Pastor Dave Rolfe.
Whatever your circumstance is, the sooner you accept where you are and work hard to make the best of where you are, the better off you're going to be. Success isn't determined by achieving a particular goal. Success is determined on a daily basis by how ruthlessly you will accept reality and make the best of it.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Did you catch that phrase Pastor Dave began with? When reality gets ruthless? What if we added, when reality gets ruthless with us, we ought to return the favor? That's what Joseph did, and God blessed him for it. And we'll learn how he did so today on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Roth. It's hard to imagine ruthless circumstances as a favor unless we recognize their potential to advance us in our life and calling. Joseph seemed to have understood this, and we can learn a great deal from him in that regard. Picking up with his story from Genesis chapter 41, here's Pastor Dave.
They call for him. Okay, Joseph, come out. The Pharaoh wants to meet you. He's like, finally, the guy remembered. So he's got hope, and he's coming. And the Pharaoh tells him his dream. And he goes, can you interpret it? And Joseph goes, I don't know. I don't interpret anything, but God knows, and he'll tell you what it means. He goes, here's the deal. You're going to have 7 years of incredible plenty. Crops are going to grow. Everything's going to be awesome for 7 years. But that's the good news. The bad news is there's going to be 7 really bad years after that. And so he goes, well, what do we do about it? And he said, well, what you need to do is you need to pick a guy who's like really sharp and smart and wise. Put him in charge. And for 7 years, you tax everybody and you store up grain. And then when you get to the 7 bad years, you'll own the world because you'll be the only ones who have grain. And you can sell that grain and you'll get rich. And the Pharaoh goes, man, that's a great idea. So you say I need one guy to be in charge of this whole program. Let's see, who would I have? And Joseph's like, you know, but he's not saying anything, but he's wanting to raise his hand. And then Pharaoh goes, wait a minute. None of my advisors told me this. You did. How about you being the guy? And Joseph's like, yeah, this always happens. It's God's blessing me. And so Joseph goes from languishing in jail to where now he is the second in command, basically, in Egypt. He's in charge of all the economics, all the business, which it's always all about the money. And so he's in charge in Egypt. And that's like awesome. And he's rewarded, you know, heavily for it. Gets to marry a girl whose dad is a pagan priest. And I don't know how that went. We don't know much about her, but had a couple kids and it's going great. Well, after 7 years of this, his family's starving up in the land of Israel. And so Jacob in chapter 42 tells his boys, they have food in Egypt. Go down there, buy us some grain. And so they go down there. And he sees them, and he recognizes them right away. They start talking to him. He's probably got all the Egyptian makeup on and everything. And he's speaking Egyptian. He's using an interpreter, so they don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And now he's got to be kind of torn. I mean, I thought things were great running Egypt, but now here are these creeps that sent me into the pit and sold me into slavery are here. How do I deal with this? And he overheard them talking, because when they were speaking Hebrew, they thought he couldn't understand. And Reuben starts telling his brothers, I told you, man, I didn't want to have Joseph killed. And you guys sold him into slavery. You didn't even listen when he was screaming out of that pit. And Joseph heard that, and it reminded him of all the pain from his past. And he began to break down and cry. So he had to leave and compose himself and came back. And he had asked them about the brothers. And they said, yeah, there were 12 of us all together. One of them is dead. And we have a second brother, Benjamin, who was Joseph's full brother, the only other child of Rachel. He's back at home with our dad, who's really old. And then here we all are. And he goes, I want to know that I can trust you guys and that you're telling me the truth. So you tell me you have another brother, bring him back with you. And they're like, oh man, our dad will never allow that because he's the only other brother that dad really likes. And so Joseph goes, well, if you don't do it, can't help you. So, and he said, leave one of your other brothers here as a deposit. So they took Simeon and they go, hey, why don't you stay here in jail and we'll go back. Well, they go back, and on the way, they notice in the bags of grain that somebody had put all their money back into the bags. So they're really freaking out. Joseph is like wondering, I wonder if they've changed. I wonder if they'll come back. I wonder if I'll see my brother Benjamin. And so now it's kind of a hard time for him. And it got harder because Simeon's languishing in jail. These guys, their dad was never going to allow Benjamin to go back with them. So he was happy to trade Simeon to keep Benjamin. But then they finally ran out of food. How long would that have taken? It could have been years, but at least maybe a year, conservatively. And they were afraid to go back to Egypt because they got their money back. So finally, Jacob tells them, go back to Egypt and get us some more food. We're all out. And they go, maybe you don't remember. Simeon's already there in jail, and he won't even face us unless we bring Benjamin. Jacob fought that notion, but finally he goes, we're going to die here. We're all going to die. Benjamin and everyone else will die. So go ahead and do it, and it'll probably kill me. So they go back, and we see that happening in chapter 43. And they come back, and when Joseph sees Benjamin, he's like, he has to leave the room and compose himself and comes back. He has a banquet for them, and he gives Benjamin five times as much food as everyone else, which kind of must have made him wonder, but they were like, yeah, you know, he's the favorite. Somehow even Egyptians can see that. And so then Simeon gets out of jail, and what happens is they leave with all their food, but they notice that their money is still in the sack. And their dad had given them extra money and presents and everything, and it's all back in their sacks. And right then, the Egyptians came up chasing them and said, somebody stole Joseph's magic cup. They would use a cup for divination purposes, and Joseph, interestingly, had one and must have used it. But they go, no way did we take your cup. Whoever has it in their bag, you can take them and kill them. And they check all the bags, and they finally get to Benjamin's bag, and the magic cup is in there. And they're like, oh, our dad will kill us. And so Joseph's watching this, and then Judah speaks up and says, please let Benjamin go. I'll take the blame. Take me and lock me up or kill me. I don't want my little brother to die. And that just blew Joseph's mind. He had been up and down so many times. He was wondering if they would ever come back. Now he saw Benjamin, and now he put them to the test. And these guys have actually learned something. One of them, Judah, would rather himself die than for his little brother, Joseph's full brother, to be killed because he cared about his dad that much. And, you know, it was more than Joseph could really stand. And he sent everyone out of the room except his brothers, and he was crying, and he told them, I'm Joseph. And he just began to hug them and kiss them, especially Benjamin. As the story goes on, he ends up sending them back to get their dad. Their dad comes back. We see over in chapter 47 how he was still running things in Egypt. And along the way, what happened is people didn't have any money anymore to buy grain. So he said, well, tell you what, your cattle, we'll put a lien on your cattle. And Pharaoh will own your cattle, but you can still use them. And then they ran out still. And he goes, okay, then give us the deed to your property, and Pharaoh will own your property and will feed you. And ultimately, now you work for Pharaoh, and now you're slaves. And that's how all this slavery came about ultimately. But he was successful. His dad had one request. You know, he said, I don't want to be buried in Egypt. So later when his father died, he had them embalm him, take him back, and bury him up in the land of Canaan. But as the story is going on, his dad's getting old. He blesses Joseph's two boys, Ephraim and Manasseh, which is kind of weird because he blessed the younger one over the older one. He crossed his hands and did that. But that was a pattern that God typically blessed somebody who was younger. And so he acknowledged that. In chapter 49, he gives his last blessing on all of his boys. They're called blessings, but like some of the guys got better fortunes than others, like Benjamin in verse 27. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Gee, thanks, Dad. But some of them were great. Judah, who had been willing to put his life on the line, he said, the Messiah is going to come through you. The scepter will not depart from you until Shiloh comes, until Messiah comes. Joseph had a really nice blessing. The other guys were kind of mixed. And then in chapter 50, he dies. A while later, Joseph himself dies, a little over 100 years old. And where we pick up the story next week, it lasts. Another Pharaoh comes along who didn't know Joseph, and they're all slaves. God's going to deliver them through Moses. Sorry to spoil the story if you haven't read it yet, but that happens. Spoiler alert. But check out in chapter 50. Once their dad died, they were like, okay, he's going to kill us now for sure. I would if I was him. So they made up this story about their dad telling them, hey, after I die, tell Joseph this. I beg you, please, forgive the trespass of your brothers, in verse 17, and their sin, for they did evil to you. Now, please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we are your servants. And Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. So don't be afraid, I'll provide for you and your kids. And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Died a bit later. And this is an awesome thought, that it's possible for people to mean bad against you and for God to have a righteous thing that he's going to do through what they did, exercising their own will. Now, just a word of caution. There are people who believe that God causes everything that happens to happen. And they use a scripture like this, you meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. They use scriptures like God hardened Pharaoh's heart later and before the Exodus. And they take those and say, so everything that people do is determined by God. That's not what the Bible teaches. In fact, when God comes in and intervenes like this, in this case, it was to save a nation. And the same thing with Pharaoh. That doesn't mean that everything that you do, if you intend it for evil, God has a good intention for it. Now, Romans 8:28 says God causes everything to work together for good. That doesn't mean that he determines everything that you do. I personally can't believe that, because then I can't imagine how God would then send people to hell if it was him that was making them choose to reject him. So don't let this scripture tell you that God always does this in everything, or that everything that happens to you is something that God is behind. God will work it all for good. The story ends up always good. But the truth is, there's some stuff that happened to you just because life stinks and people are mean. And it isn't necessarily God going, oh, I want this to happen. Don't use exceptions and create a rule from them, okay? But here's the life of Joseph. What do we learn from it? One of the things, clearly, is that we learn that whatever your circumstance is, the sooner you accept where you are and work hard to make the best of where you are, the better off you're going to be. Success isn't determined by achieving a particular goal. Success is determined on a daily basis by how ruthlessly you will accept reality and make the best of it. That's what happened to him all along the way, and that's the choice that we have. I cannot afford to waste time feeling sorry for myself. I cannot afford to waste energy mourning over things that have happened to me, because I have a race to run. I have a life to live. So what happens, happens. Now, I got to do what I'm called to do. And if I'm a victim, I want to have the most integrity of any victim ever. I can find success in whatever happens to me. It's a huge rule of life. But in particular, in Joseph's life, I see a couple of other things. For one thing, we realize life is a roller coaster. Joseph's life reminds us of this. We have such a detailed biography of Joseph. Life is going to have some great ups and some great downs. And that's the way it's going to be. You're going to have good days and bad days. You're going to have good years and bad years. That's just the way it is. And if you tell me that that's not the way it is for you, you're delusional, because that's the way real life is. Now, maybe somebody has told you that the Christian life is one that's always up. And so you act like that so much, you're starting to believe your own delusions. But the truth is, it's not that way. It wasn't for Jesus. It's not for us. It wasn't for Joseph. There are ups and there are downs, but here's the critical thing. Be careful how you interpret the ups and the downs. Because if you're not careful, you'll fall into a pattern whereby when you're up, you think it always means that you're so special that you deserve to be there. That your up is in relationship to what a good person you are. If you're up, you're up. Great. Appreciate it. Enjoy it. But don't think that it makes you better than people who are down. Because the other thing that's going to happen, sometimes you're down. And don't believe because you're in a down spot, because you're in a low point, that somehow God is punishing you, that somehow you are somebody who's like getting what you deserve. That was the attitude of his brothers. Oh man, this is happening because of what we did. But Joseph easily could have said, I'm in prison because I should have never told them about the dream. I should have never worn the fancy coat. I should have never. No, he realized, when I'm down, this is a chance for me to scratch and claw my way back up. But it's not God saying, you're no good. And I think it's important for us to remember that. God is there when we are up, and God is there when we are down. He doesn't change. And he has a plan for us, and he loves us. And he isn't thrown off by us having a bad year, even. He's there. And here's the thing, as it turns out, he tends to work more when we are in the down than we are in the up. Now, it doesn't feel that way at the time. I always hear people saying stuff like that. And when I'm really in a down spot, I expect God to speak to me in powerful ways. And he doesn't. I've never found that I am so down right now that I'm hearing God's voice. No, you know, later on, when you're back up, you're going to hear God's voice about who you were when you were down. God is working in a powerful way when you are down, but you know, you may not see it at the time. You just put one foot in front of the other, and you try to be as faithful as you can where you are, be it a slave, be it a prisoner, be it someone who is neglected by your family or whatever. I'm too busy to make the best of it to sit and worry about how I feel, but I realize that this pain that I'm going through is something that God's going to use. And the ultimate bottom line of the whole thing is, and I don't like this any more than you do, but God works his deliverance generally through pain. And I wish that wasn't the case. I feel like, oh man, sometimes I wish I was one of these faith people that, you know, just believes that if I do the right things, I'm always going to be rich and powerful and all that kind of stuff. The truth is, well, you women who have delivered a child, you know about the pain of deliverance. If men had to bear children and squeeze them out, the population would have ended centuries ago. But real deliverance, really being set free, is going to hurt. And we always find that out. Whenever I'm learning tough lessons, it's painful. But that's the way it works. And if you doubt me on that, what's the greatest deliverance ever? It was Jesus Christ when he hung on the cross for us. He loved us that much. You talk about a down? He's God. He's in heaven. All this glory. And Philippians 2 says he emptied himself. And he came down and he's born in a barn. And he lived the life of a servant. And then he's tortured and killed and humiliated in front of everyone on the cross. And yet the scriptures tell us that's when God did his greatest work, much greater than creating the universe, was when God bared his arm in achieving our redemption. And as much as it hurt, he said, nobody kills me. I'm giving myself. Isaiah 53 says, God the Father looked on his son as he was humiliated and slaughtered. And he said, and it pleased the Lord to crush him. Because he loves us that much. And he knew anything that could deliver us from our destruction of our sin was something that was going to hurt. And the one it hurt most was God himself. And yet he did what he had to do. And then Jesus tells those who follow him, it's not going to be any different for you. If you want to come after me, you need to deny yourself and take up your cross daily and follow me. Deliverance will come only through pain. It's weird, but it's just true. And the cross reminds us of that forever.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Concluding our time on The Balanced Word with what to do when in a jam, here's Pastor Dave once again.
We're in a jam. We have good days and bad days, but the truth is we can't save ourselves. If we're going to be delivered, it's going to come because we have trusted him and put our faith in him that as he was on the cross, he carried our sins. And that's what the Bible calls the gospel. And so we have this good news and we have an opportunity. We can give our lives to him and be delivered by the pain of the cross. It won't make your life not hurt anymore. A lot of times evangelists, in trying to get as many people to come forward as possible, they make you believe that, man, if you have problems, drug problems, money problems, marriage problems, whatever's wrong in your life, you don't have a job, just come forward and all that'll be fixed. No, it won't. He never says that. He says, take up your cross and follow me. But that doesn't sell as well as a message that just says your life will be fixed. No, your life is going to be a roller coaster whether or not you put your faith in Jesus. But the question is, where do you want it to end up? How do you want the story to end? There's no guarantee that your life is going to get awesome while you're still alive. But if you've trusted Jesus Christ, there is a guarantee that someday you will rule over more than Egypt. You will rule and reign with Jesus forever and ever in heaven. That's where we're going if we've just entered into a relationship with him. If you've never done that, today would be a really good day to do that. I don't care if you're up right now. I don't care if you're down right now. Jesus Christ showed us what it looks like for God to take on the pain of all of our mess ups and to give us a chance to start life over.
Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Roth. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo, online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands and